November 8, 2020, Sunday, 12:30 p.m. Dear listeners, yesterday, I was able to produce the second episode of the Conversations where I shared my journey of discovery of the transcendent up to the point of the conception of In Search for Meaning. It ended with me sharing my return to the Bible as a source of meaning, though I believe I did not do a great job of explaining it, partly because it was already too late in the night and perhaps I thought that I had exhausted my history and had said all that I could. I write now, or I speak now, in order to tap onto that final beat of the segment and expand my reasons for returning to the sacred and ancient texts. Also, I would like to share this reflection of mine while I was taking a shower earlier today. I was contemplating on the narrative I have shared yesterday and found a curious thing. I have observed several in quotations falling out of some sorts with my faith or belief system. What made them unsustainable for me, if there's such a thing as sustainability with one's faith? Then how can one make one's faith or belief system more sustainable, or continue to be sustainable, to say the least, in the long run? My return to the Bible was greatly influenced by Dr. Jordan Peterson. He is a clinical psychologist and a follower of Jung. One of his researches includes the understanding of the biblical text. He presents his findings in his Maps of Meaning and Biblical Series classes. By the way, Maps of Meaning as well is a published book by Dr. Peterson, and that is where he based his classes. The values he has mined from his studies on the Bible are spread throughout his works, such as the 12 Rules for Life, his lectures, and his conversations with other intellectuals. His reason for focusing on the Bible, as I have understood it, was because of several reasons. First, he believes that, in part, the Western civilization and the present Western society is founded on Judeo-Christian tradition, which has continued to take major blows from rationality ever since the Age of Enlightenment. Second, he was searching for answers to questions in regards to the atrocities that had occurred in the last major world wars, which continued in the Cold War. Third, he was searching for a remedy against the invasion of postmodernism in academia as well as in politics, and remedy against the insidious rise of Marxist ideologies in the Western societies. And lastly, he was searching for a preventive measure against extremists from both sides of the ideological spectrum, that is, nihilism in the far left and authoritarian regime and dogmatism in the far right. Dr. Peterson shared that reckless abandon of religion, the wanton disregard of myths, fantasy, and story, would lead to the disintegration of Western society, just like how several years after Nietzsche's proclamation of the death of God has led to the rise of Marxist ideology and the resulting tragedies that has befallen mankind. Out from that philosophy, Dr. Peterson returns to the Judeo-Christian roots to rediscover the values that the peoples have lost at the end of the 20th century, just like how Carl Jung and other 19th and 20th century thinkers did. What fascinated me to return to the Bible as a source of meaning was Dr. Peterson's approach toward understanding the Bible. He took a psychological approach, utilizing the theories and tools of psychology in decoding the sacred texts and extracting invaluable values out from it. Dr. Peterson's approach excited me to do the same. Since I have a fair amount of knowledge about psychology, I am thinking that I could read and analyze the ancient texts under that lens. I'm ever so hopeful that finally I can find footing, grounding, meaning through this path. Another thing that I am hopeful about this whole endeavor is that I am marrying rationality and faith in here. So far in my journey in life, it has always been between the two, either a complete surrender to faith, the belief system, or critical and theorizing reframing of everything that had happened in my life. Not so long ago, I have been introduced to phenomenology, which takes into account one's personal experiences, that is, subjective experiences in conjunction with objective data, as a valid material for analysis. I am hypothesizing that the immersion of one's self into the biblical texts would produce a phenomena which, when extracted and analyzed, would provide us with meaning. Now, great caution is to be exercised when reading the Bible in any way, because the Bible itself has been overly used to justify the innumerable crimes that different people has done throughout the ages, people who subscribe to Christianity nonetheless. It is really interesting because some people, despite professing their faith to God, to Jesus, proclaiming to the world that they believe, are still able to do things that goes against the very things that they profess and proclaim before the world and before God. That is why when he was asked whether he believes in God, Dr. Peterson would not straight up give an answer. He would ask what it means to believe. For him, to believe is to act what you believe as if it is true. And many so-called believers act out in contradictory ways. He could not owe it to himself to say he believes in God, because he himself is aware that he has a very long way to go before he even becomes worthy in the eye of the ultimate transcendent reality that is God. It is the same case with Neil Donald Walsh. Mr. Walsh do not say that he is any better than everybody else because God chose to speak to him. By the way, a little background on Mr. Walsh. He wrote a series of books titled Conversations with God, and several other books that sprung out of it. And I've mentioned the works of Mr. Walsh in my conversations, the second episode of my conversations. Anyway, instead, he denies this stature, this privilege, because even he himself knows that he falls short of being God, that is, embodying what and who God really is. Mr. Neil said it himself that tremendous pressure is upon him because he felt he had a responsibility as a messenger of God to be a model for God's message to the world. Goodness. Even with his humility, Mr. Walsh have already shown so much. I am not exempted from these contradictions in faith and action. In psychology, we call this incongruence between a held thought or belief and behavior. There are a lot of examples of these in my sharing yesterday, and I think that these are the primary reason for my falling out from my faith and belief system. Time and again, I've thought to have embodied this value and virtues, but I am always proven wrong by the catastrophic endings of my relationships. In each and every failure, I am confronted with these paradoxes, but I stubbornly refuse to confront them. Paradoxes are thoughts that are simultaneously true during a particular situation. You may have experienced being conflicted with paradoxes in your life before, like for example, you love your parents, but at the same time you hate them for something they have said or something they failed to do. I was able to become aware of paradoxes in my exposure to Gestalt therapy. Usually, we hold onto paradoxes through a but statements. However, these contradictory thoughts, which, by the way, produces a significant amount of psychic discomfort, as to result in frustrations or anxieties that are hard to pin down. So these contradictory experiences can be remedied if you change but statements into and statements. For example, like, I love her, but I hate her, into I love her and I hate her. This reframing of the paradox produces a significant amount of relief to the suffering, since it gives you an allowance to hold these experiences or thoughts or emotions on equal footing. However, this does not mean that the paradox has been resolved. These polar elements are still contradictory to each other. The reframing only removes the urgency to resolve the paradox right then and there. But in the end, you cannot continue to live a paradox. You will have to make a decision. You will have to solve the paradox. Between conflicting ideologies, ideas, and emotions, you have to choose which between the two are more valuable to you. This is a much troubling dilemma for a confluent and agreeable person like me, because it isn't clear for us which or who we are going to prioritize, the self or the other. This becomes even more complicated if the paradox involves a significant loved one, because you value their presence, their well-being, as much as you value yourself, well, if not more. It isn't clear cut which between these two values would make a much more meaningful outcome. And so, you got to take a risk. The risk being to offend. Because if you choose to value yourself more, you risk offending the other. And if you abandon yourself for the other, you risk offending yourself. And though society may think you did a very good job of sacrificing yourself for others, sometimes what little offense you did yourself will come back to haunt you at night. Perhaps this is one reason behind suicide, because instead of speaking that which they ought to speak, they cram up instead, as to avoid the risk of others' disapproval and judgment. I mean, after all, it is built into us humans, the basic fear of our tribesmen's abandonment. To be alone as a result of social castration spells death for our early primate ancestors. Therefore, it is much better for the self to turn against itself and annihilate itself, because it could no longer contain the paradoxes it has or the self has in mind. During those times, I thought that my faith, that my belief system would provide me the template, a hierarchy of values. However, it has become apparent to me that what I came to believe to be the means to lead me into a virtuous life, an enlightened life, a happy life, are bereft from the one thing that makes this life bearable to live, that is, meaning. So far, I get this strong conviction that the proper way to live this life is to live it meaningfully. I just hope, dear listeners, that this time I have found a solution to this paradoxical life. Sincerely, in search for meaning.